While fascist dictators fell into the trap of believing propaganda campaigns they conducted with their own people, leaders such as Roosevelt and Churchill, even if in very general ways, told citizens about the hard truths of their situation. In his first war report to the nation on December 9, 1941, for example, President Roosevelt not only told the people, "So far, all the news has been bad," he also told them, "It will not only be a long war, it will be a hard war. There would be shortages. We shall have to give up many things entirely." FDR said he would not tell the people that there would be sacrifices ahead. He said instead that there would be the privilege of suffering. Today, the fatal flaws of the administration's strategy are apparent. Bush's team confused the political propaganda campaign with the realities of the war-making campaign. We were more focused on creating a sense of gravity and urgency about the threat from Saddam Hussein than governing on the basis of the truths of the situation. As soon as Bush decided to confront Iraq, the groundwork for a public campaign began to be laid. The new doctrine on preemption was part of the elaborate effort. So was the gradual ratcheting up of the rhetoric from late 2001 into 2002. Before 9/11, our rhetoric about Iraq had focused on warning Saddam Hussein not to develop weapons of mass destruction, while the policy centered on containing him with enhanced sanctions. In the first few weeks after 9/11, advisors still talked about the need for Saddam Hussein to let inspectors back into Iraq. Vice President Cheney even told Tim Russert on Meet the Press on September 16, 2001, that Saddam Hussein's bottled up at this point, and he acknowledged that there was no evidence linking Saddam to 9/11. But by late November, the president was not ruling out military action against Iraq, and he was saying that Iraq would be held accountable if it was found to be developing WMD. When Cheney returned to meet the press in early December, he raised the possibility that Iraq had been involved in the 9/11 attacks by citing a report, later to be discounted, that a high-ranking Iraqi intelligence official had met with Mohammed Atta, the leader of the 9/11 hijackers, in April 2001. And Cheney now was saying unequivocally that Saddam has aggressively pursued the development of additional weapons of mass destruction since 1998. At times, the media stoked the controversy. Before citing one of the terrorists involved in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing as an example, during the same December interview with Cheney, Tim Russert said, "What we do know is that Iraq is harboring terrorists." Then he asked Cheney, "If they're harboring terrorists, why not go in and get them?" In the early months of 2002, the groundwork continued to be laid. By February, Condi Rice was citing the need for a serious response to a regime like Iraq that pursues WMD. Pushing the envelope of credibility, Cheney was asserting that Iraq had a robust set of programs to develop their own weapons of mass destruction, that we know Saddam has been actively and aggressively doing everything he can to enhance his capabilities, and raising Iraq's links and ties to terrorists. Cheney also suggested that if aggressive action were required, the public would support it. In March, the president sent Cheney to the Middle East to consult with friends and allies in the region about Iraq. Before Cheney's return, the president asserted that Iraq was a nation that has weapons of mass destruction. This is a nation run by a man who is willing to kill his own people by using chemical weapons, a man who won't let inspectors into the country, a man who's obviously got something to hide. And he is a problem, and we're going to deal with him. But the first stage is to consult with our allies and friends, and that's exactly what we're doing. After meeting with Bush upon his return, Cheney said the leaders he met with are as concerned as we are when they see the work that Saddam has done to develop chemical and biological weapons and his pursuit of nuclear weapons, the past history that we all know about in terms of his having used chemicals. Cheney added, "If you haven't seen it, there's a devastating piece in this week's New Yorker magazine on the 1988 use by Saddam Hussein of chemical weapons against the Kurds. If the article is accurate, and I've asked for verification, if we can find it, he ran a campaign against the Kurds for 17 months, and bombed literally 200 villages and killed thousands and thousands of Iraqis with chemical weapons. That's not the kind of man we want to see develop even more deadly capacity, for example, nuclear weapons." Bush later added, When we say we're going to do something, we mean it, that we are resolved to fight the war on terror. This isn't a short-term strategy for us, that we understand history has called us into action, and we're not going to miss this opportunity to make the world more peaceful and more free. A few days later, Cheney pushed the envelope even more by bringing up the most fearful scenario of a madman seeking nuclear weapons. "This is a man of great evil, as the president said," Cheney said on CNN's late edition, "and he is actively pursuing nuclear weapons at this time, and we think that's cause for concern for us and for everybody in the region." The heightened rhetoric on Iraq, including unequivocal statements that made things sound more certain than was known, continued into the fall campaign push, when it would be amplified to a much greater and sustained degree. In late August 2002, at the Veterans of Foreign Wars Convention in Nashville, Cheney said, "Simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us." The relationship between Vice President Cheney and President Bush has always been clouded in mystery to some extent, but it is a very close one. The two spend considerable time together in private meetings, their discussions largely kept confidential. But it's obvious that back in 2002, Bush knew the increasingly strong language Cheney was employing on Iraq. The vice president can lean a little more forward in his rhetoric than the president. In the 2004 re-election campaign, for instance, Cheney would be the attack dog who went after Kerry a little more pointedly than the president could. It is clear to me now, looking back, that some of the same strategy was used in the Iraq campaign. However, the strong language used by Cheney may also have been due to the vice president's habit of being unable to stay on message. At times, he simply could not contain his deep-seated certitude, even arrogance, to the detriment of the president. Such was the case at the VFW speech, when Cheney essentially said that having UN inspectors go into Iraq would be useless or even misleading. Such was also the case when Cheney said just before the invasion that "my belief is we will, in fact, be greeted as liberators." That was off script, and it helped suggest a rose-colored view of Iraq that would prove harmful to the president later. As Bush prepared to make the case for war at the UN, Condi Rice alluded to the nuclear threat from Iraq in stark terms on September 8, 2002. "The problem here is that there will always be some uncertainty about how quickly Saddam can acquire nuclear weapons. But we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. The rhetoric in our campaign to sell war would continue to grow more certain and more grave. The nuclear threat and Iraq's contacts with al-Qaeda became increasingly central to the talking points, helping to create a needed sense of urgency for dealing with the grave and gathering threat from Iraq." Contrary to Cheney's view of the UN route being useless, the president agreed with other advisors that it was important to show he was exhausting all diplomatic options. Pursuing a new UN resolution that included an immediate call for Saddam to come clean and let inspectors back in was vital to building public support. Even more important for the American public was to have strong bipartisan congressional backing. It was all part of the campaign. Americans would be much more likely to support war if they felt Bush had pursued and exhausted diplomatic options, and if Congress provided strong bipartisan approval. Even the Cheney-driven White House effort to provide all Americans with the smallpox vaccine that was being pushed publicly in the latter weeks of 2002 played into the environment of fear about the Iraq WMD threat. It seems to me a little cynical to suggest that its timing was calculated, but it did not hurt the broader campaign to sell the war. Since I was just the deputy press secretary at the time, I was neither integrally involved in nor fully briefed about all the plans for selling the war, but I would have a role at times during the build-up to war. On Friday, September 20th, the same week as the president's trip to Iowa and the news about Larry Lindsey's war cost estimate, Bush hosted a meeting with Republican governors in the state dining room at the White House. The governors had come to town for their association's annual fall fundraising reception the night before. While Ari held the morning press gaggle, I represented him at the meeting. With the media excluded from the meeting, President Bush, just 2 years removed from being a governor himself, was conspicuously candid with his former colleagues, now trusted friends and political allies. His remarks focused on homeland security, and in particular, Iraq, and Bush's forthrightness about his thinking and approach on Iraq was revealing. The president talked about the capture of Ramzi bin al-Shib by Pakistani authorities 9 days earlier, A key member of al-Qaeda, Bin al-Shib, had been on the FBI's top five list of wanted terrorists for his role in planning 9/11 and other terrorist attacks. "We'll knock them down one by one," Bush said. "As for bin Laden, we don't know where he is, but he has been diminished." Then he turned to Iraq. "It is important to know that Iraq is an extension of the war on terror," Bush stated. "In the international debate, we are starting to shift the burden of guilty to the guilty. The international community is risk-averse, but I assure you, I am going to stay plenty tough." Bush said he was reaching out to world leaders to build support for war, noting he'd spoken to President Putin of Russia earlier that same day. Bush went on to talk about his favorite theme, the importance of promoting liberty and individual freedom around the world. He held out hope for a peaceful transition in Iraq. "I believe regime change can occur if we have strong, robust inspections. Saddam Hussein is a guy who is liable to have his head show up on a platter, if enough outside pressure was brought to bear on him." Expressing how deeply he despised Saddam, Bush added, "He is a brutal, ugly, repugnant man who needs to go. He is also paranoid. This is a guy who killed his own security guards recently. I would like to see him gone peacefully. But if I unleash the military, I promise you it will be swift and decisive."